Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Continuing with Canto 10, Chapter 34, we're going to start with Text 28. Those of you who like to look up the verse, 10:34:28, the Shankachuta topic. He's taken the gopis, or forced the gopis, or intimidated the gopis without touching them with his big stick, and shooing them off in a northerly direction, right in front of Krishna and Balaram. And they called out, "Help, Krishna, Rama, protect us." The lords called out in reply, "Do not fear." Then they picked up logs of a shala tree and quickly pursued that lowest of guyakas, who swiftly ran away. Vishwanath, no BBT purport, here's Vishwanath, short. As cowherds, in order to protect their cows, pursue a person on seeing that he has herded away all their cows, Krishna and Balaram pursued Shankachuda. Jiva Goswami. They pursued the demon at great speed immediately. Or they pursued and came close to the demon who was moving quickly. And Sanatana Goswami writes, replying, in order to make the gopis fearless, they said, "Do not fear." They caught up with the person who had taken the women. They grabbed shala trees because they were strong boys, or because Krishna was eager to take the jewel. The demon was the lowest of guyakas, since he had previously performed such acts. And there's no information of what he previously did. And we won't go there with this Tulsi Vivaha story. I don't think that's it. So text 29. When Shankachuda saw the two of them coming toward him like the personified forces of time and death. Now this is mentioned several times because the text says Kala dash Mrityu Evo Dvijan. Kala Mrityu Evo Dvijan. So the translation reads, when Shankachuda saw the two of them coming forward toward him like the personified forces of time and death, he was filled with anxiety, for good reason. Confused, he abandoned the women and fled for his life. Vishwanath writes, like time, the inspirer, and death, the inspired, Balaram, the inspirer, said, "Kill him quickly." And Krishna, the inspired, said, "Yes, I will kill him." Jiva Goswami writes, Krishna, that does the reversal, was like the dispatcher of time, and Balaram was like the dispatcher of death. The fool, bewildered, though fleeing, found it impossible to save himself and thus thought of suicide. Or he was bewildered about what to do. Sanatan Goswami writes, he saw the two coming after him, anupraptau. He was not worried about their coming, since he was insane, but he looked back constantly with great fear. The two were like time, the instigator, and death, the final result. Interesting, isn't it? Time, the destroyer of all things, and then when something is destroyed, that's death. Kala and Ritu. Although the two are forms of the highest bliss, they appeared in this way to the foolish demon because of his fear. That is clear in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:43-17. That's Krishna entering into the wrestling arena. I'll read the text. Where it is explained that the wrestlers of Kamsa saw Krishna as a thunderbolt and Kamsa saw him as death. So I'm going to go to that text. This is Krishna entering into the wrestling arena. It's a celebrated text. There's 10 different responses or visions of the same object, Krishna. The various groups of the people in the arena regarded Krishna in different ways when he entered it with his elder brother. The wrestlers saw Krishna as a lightning bolt. The men of Mathura as the best of males. That's two. The women as Cupid in person. The cowherd men as their relative. That's four. The impious rulers as a chastiser, his parents as their child, that's six. The king of the Bhojas as death. The unintelligent as the Supreme Lord's universal form, that's eight. The yogis as the absolute truth. And the Vrishnis as their supreme worshipable deity. So that sentence again reads, although the two are forms of the highest bliss, they appeared in this way to the foolish demon because of his fear. That is clear in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:43-17, where it is explained that the wrestlers of Kamsa saw Krishna as the thunderbolt and Kamsa saw him as death. Terrified, Udvijan. He fled with speed, as previously, to save his life, not with a desire for fame. He simply fled without fighting. This was because he was a fool, since he provoked his own death and did not see that running away would only produce his death. He was a fool because he did not know at all proper conduct. Text 30, 10:34-30. Lord Govinda chased the demon wherever he ran, eager to take his crest jewel. Interesting. Meanwhile, Lord Balaram stayed with the women to protect them. And here's the BBT purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur explains that the women were fatigued from being driven away. Doesn't say they were fatigued from dancing, they were just, when you're enjoying, you don't feel fatigued. So, and thus Lord Balaram protected them and consoled them as they rested. Meanwhile, Lord Krishna went after the demon. Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur writes, Balaram stayed with the gopis, tired from running, comforting and protecting them. Jiva Goswami writes, why did they not throw the sala tree at him from a far way and kill him? Answer. Krishna wanted to take the jewel. But if he killed the demon, he could not touch the dead body. He desired to take the jewel. While the demon was alive, he wanted to give the jewel to Balaram. That was his intention. Or, Jiva Goswami writes, he wanted to take the jewel because the demon would stay alive as long as the jewel was with him. Sanatan Goswami writes, since Krishna was the king of Gokula, Govinda, it was proper that he pursue the demon in anger to kill him and free the gopis. Question, similar. Why did he not kill the demon from far off by throwing stones? Answer, he wanted to take the jewel from the demon when he was alive, since it would be improper to touch him when dead. Balaram stayed with the women where the demon had left them. He could not override the desire of his younger brother. He was capable of protecting them from the demon, since he was strong, Bala. He was also capable of killing the demon. The reason Krishna brought him was so that he could protect the women. And that's it for this morning. A little excitement. Adventure, mystery, a thrill at every moment. Not at all bland. That's the image. It's not Brahman at all, not Brahmajyoti. There's a bliss. And there's a bliss in hearing. And there's a bliss in the describing and remembering, and I don't know if it's what it's been like for you, but throughout the day and in the morning, you know, the thoughts of Krishna's pastimes are there. Like one devotee on the other side of the world literally was saying he finds himself remembering these pastimes. And even while chanting, is that wrong? Main thing is when you're chanting is chanting. And the instant, because the name is everything, Krishna is everything. And Krishna's pastimes flow from Krishna. Stay with the name. Don't get... So, but it's not... There's nothing wrong. Or say the deity form. Each of us have our favorite deities, most likely. And someone was sharing with me a photograph of a deity that they saw when they went on a little side trip. It wasn't with all the group, when in Hampi. It's a deity of Sitaram and Lakshman by his side, and over by the side or a little bit behind is Sugriva. And it's the place in Kishkinda where they met, kind of up on a hill and so forth. And this devotee, with the other devotees that were with them, they felt this something, like a wave of mercy and attraction and reciprocation, and it was one of those, you know, experiential moments. And so they offered prayers, and then they left, and a whole bunch of cows came, because it's a rural place, not, you know, commercialized, and mooing, and, you know, they felt they were with Krishna in Vrindavan, something they're just transported by everything that Krishna arranged. So, moments may come where we feel, I mean, it's even in our not so purified stage. It's described in Nectar Devotion. Krishna gives some encouragement sometimes, and he'll reveal something, pull back the curtain and then close the curtain, and I'm here, I'm watching. Similarly, one devotee shared with me that their whole group, their group together where they live, are really focusing on chanting. And this devotee says, normally I'm struggling and distracted and so forth, but one day it was just the opposite. It was so, it was timeless and absorption and something they've never felt before. Krishna's encouragement. I mean, that may or may not happen to any of us. Doesn't mean Krishna isn't being kind or something if he doesn't do that. But when Krishna does that, it's something very special. From the name, from the form, be just like it said, the form of Krishna and Balaram are all bliss. But, you know, we discussed this last evening. Bhava Grahi Janardana. It's not so often used, but Prabhupada would use it. Bhava Grahi Janardana, that the Supreme Lord, Janardana, meaning of the Lord of the heart, he understands our intention, and he, that bhava grahi, and he reciprocates. So we're a neophyte, and it's good to have an intention in our exchanges with Krishna, with the name, with the scripture, with the deity, with the devotees, and refine it and move towards that goal in doable steps. Just continue to make little doable steps towards that goal and expect Krishna's mercy, however he wants to extend his mercy. And we just continue with the chanting and the hearing and the remembering and the worship and the sadhana bhakti stages with faith that cleansing is going on, and the mercy particles of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are being sprinkled on us, even though we're not qualified or eligible. That's our hope. That's our faith. And get ready for the mystery of what's next. And who knows? Krishna may pull the curtain back. In any case, whether he pulls the curtain back or not, he's there, he's seeing, he's observing, he's reciprocating, he's helping. That's totally missing in the life of the materialist. It's totally missing in the life of the impersonalist. And it's there to differing degrees in unsteady bhakti stage. And it becomes more prominent in the steady bhakti stage, because someone has undergone the purification, the anartana vritti stages sufficiently with faith and hope and continuing to take shelter with Krishna, knowing that Krishna is recognizing our intention, although we're faulty. And gradually reach the stage of steadiness. That was one of the questions yesterday. This nishtha stage, there's a price. And the price is our eagerness to reach there. That's Rupa Goswami's teaching. When there's eagerness, then there's effort. If there's no eagerness, then it's hackneyed or complacent or routine. And that's okay. Routine is also. But when there's eagerness, then you go further more quickly. So what if you don't have eagerness? Then you just do the routine with faith. So it starts with faith and association and devotional practice, and gradually the intention, the design is to awaken bhakti, this higher consciousness that's dormant within. And so doing what we're doing is part of awakening that dormant consciousness, the eagerness to hear more and connect more and be part of Krishna's entourage, even in our little worlds. Let's see if there's some discussion. Yeah, go ahead. I can hear you. I'll repeat.
I was thinking about the universal form. It is for less intelligent people.
Yeah.
So I was just trying to
in the case of Parikshit Maharaj, so I mean, he has very limited time to hear the pastimes of the Lord. But Sukadeva Goswami took a lot of time to explain in detail.
Yeah.
The whole, universal form in the second canto that we were reading. So I was just trying to understand. I know he asked those questions, maybe he's explaining it. So I was just, Prabhupada mentioned this is also transcendental because it is related to the Lord.
Yes.
I was just trying to understand at the length that he explained. So.
And it's multiple times. It's not just there, not just canto one, canto two, chapter one. It's multiple times. Well, you know, what is intelligence? And then what's less intelligent, more intelligent? Just hearing Prabhupada's explanation about the human form of life being more intelligent. And then he was explaining Shriya Vaishas Tata Shudras Tepiyanti Param Gatim. So those are classifications of less intelligent. But the less intelligent are also eligible for Param Gatim. So you start somewhere. So that universal form is start somewhere. So Parikshit was already beyond that. He's a bhakta. But it's being presented by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit in a sequential, systematic way. So he starts with universal form, though, then goes to Paramatma, then goes to Bhagavan, and the transformation of heart, change of heart, to loving service. So it's not customized for Maharaj Parikshit, it's everyone, it's us. And so less intelligent is tadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upiyantite. There is the source of everything. The universal form isn't the source of everything. It's an expansion of an aspect of Krishna. But to understand, for those who are less intelligent, they don't understand what higher intelligence can understand, you begin somewhere. And you and I and, you know, sadhakas should not think, oh, I'm not going to pay attention to that because that's for less intelligent. It purifies intelligence specifically so that one becomes more eligible to understand Paramatma and then Bhagavan. And that's the purpose in the descriptions of the universal form. Or I like Sariputta's language. The way we view the universe has a profound effect on how we view ourselves. We're part of, and that which we're part of has a source. So there are some reasons why it's there. Although for the less intelligent, here's Krishna coming into the wrestling arena and some people see universal form. I mean, who knows what they're actually seeing? To see the universal form, that's pretty profound. But what exactly it means they saw him as universal form, I can't say. Yeah.
One other question, Maharaj. When Sukadeva Goswami is explaining about the creation, if I can ask that question, which is not related to the class.
It's okay.
So there he was explaining about how the Lord thought, and then the senses came, the sense objects and the senses.
Yeah.
And then the demigods were controlling those senses.
Yes.
There he was explaining about the skin.
Yeah.
Then he was talking about the trees are the trees are the controlling powers for those, for the skin pores and all.
Yeah.
So I could not understand that trees, I was thinking those are the actually higher conscious beings that controls the senses.
Yeah.
But the trees, I could not understand how it is.
I think I have to go look at this section. And it's definitely not easy to understand. The principle is, you know, that's a stretch, what to speak of the application of the principle. But the principle is the senses and the sense organs, let's say, you know, the ear and the power of hearing. So the sense and the sense organ are different. The sense of touch and the skin are different. And then there's a third entity, that's the demigod controlling. So let's just take hearing, that's a little different. The principle is, although you may have the sense organ, and you may have the sense power, but if the demigod restricts, then you're deaf. Not just because the instrument is broken, or if the power of hearing is withdrawn by the demigod, or not activated by the demigod, then you can't hear. So the connection between trees and, you know, the demigods, I'd have to look at the section. The application of the principle is a little, subtle. I'd have to look at the section. You can send me the section, I'll look at it. I won't guarantee an answer. Okay.
One quick question. In one of the purports, Prabhupada was mentioning about one of the sloka. There is a different edition of the Bhagavatam. That line is different. Is there a different edition of Bhagavatam?
I don't understand so much about that. Where there are commentaries of our acharyas that speak about some editions or some versions of the Bhagavatam have that word instead of this word. What they're referring to, I don't know. But apparently there are. Because, you know, it was written a long time ago and then transferred. Of course, it was in the sound form, then in the written form, and then copies made where there's different versions, apparently. And scholars have a big, you know, big time going over, you know, this version, that version, and authenticating things and I'm the authority. So, but our acharyas recognize there are different versions, and they don't just like dismiss this word or that word because the essence is the same. So, but in more than that, I don't know. Okay.
Guru Maharaj, as you were mentioning about Krishna's reciprocation, even in our not completely purified stages, I'm thinking about the current situation and having this opportunity to directly hearing from you. That seems a wonderful opportunity, and I'm seeing a significant difference in my quality of chanting and at least the desire to chant attentively since this lockdown phase and hearing from you morning and evening. I would like to hear from you what is that I can consciously do in these periods of little stronger sadhana compared to the other phases, because as I know it's in this unsteady phase, so the next wave of falling down or weak sadhana comes. What is it I can do so I can draw some strength from here, not to fall completely off?
Well, quantity and quality both. And behind the quantity, which helps strengthen quality, focus on quality even as you're increasing quantity. And the quality principle is for the pleasure of Krishna. That's the bhakti principle, for the pleasure of Krishna. And the more you can get to that, the more it will stay afterwards, because that consciousness is who we really are. And you can expect the unsteady up and down, but that consciousness, as it evolves and grows, doesn't go away. It has grown. Anyone else?
Megha Mataji from Naperville. Question is, can you please explain what is Nishtha stage or the symptoms of Nishtha stage? After we attain Nishtha stage, can one still fall down?
What was the last part? And
after attaining Nishtha, can one still fall down?
Yes. Nishtha means that the anarthas are sufficiently removed and the bhakti has sufficiently developed that although there are residual anarthas, they don't act. That is, bhakti overwhelms them, overpowers them. That's the verse from the Bhagavatam is Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki, Naishtaki. That's the Nishtha stage. And Prayeshu means almost to nil. Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu, almost to nil. But those almost to nil can rise and overwhelm. So it's possible. It's, you know, steady means it's not likely to happen, or it doesn't happen. But it's certainly possible to happen. So that's a description. So bhakti becomes steady. What does it look like? It's bhakti is steady. It's not, one continues to follow the vidhis or the rules and regulations of bhakti, but there is not specifically the attachment to the vidhis, but it's the awakening of bhakti that drives the steadiness.
This is Chandramukhi Mataji from Naperville. How do I increase my eagerness towards my spiritual practices?
Well, the main impetus to achieve eagerness for spiritual practices is longing for eagerness in spiritual practices. You can look at the song written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Kabe Habi Bol Se Din Amar. Read it, and it's an expression of longing. When, oh when, will that day be mine? When? So that strengthens eagerness or enthusiasm.
This is Prakash Govindan Prabhu from Singapore. You mentioned the various forms of Krishna and meditating on them today. And in the past too, you have mentioned that there is nothing wrong in meditating and worshipping on Lord Rama, Narsingadeva and other forms of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
However, in the Bhagavad Gita purport to the Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto verse, Srila Prabhupada says, one should fix his mind on this original form of Godhead, Krishna. One should not even divert his attention to other forms of the Lord. The Lord has multi forms as Vishnu, Narayana, Rama, Varaha, etc. But a devotee should concentrate his mind on the form that was present before Arjuna. Can you please help me understand
this?
Sure.
In temples, Prabhupada installed Sita, Ram, Lakshman, Hanuman, deities. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when there was attack in the Chaitanya Mat, he installed deity of Lord Narsingadeva for protection. And same thing was done in Mayapur. And we, in our Vaishnava calendar, we observe appearance days of forms of Vishnu, and we, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, when done properly, or when done consciously of Krishna as the source of all avatars, he's the source of everything. When we pay attention to anything that's part of everything, it strengthens our attachment and meditation upon the personality of Godhead Krishna in his original form as standing before Arjuna. Now, the form standing before Arjuna was Vasudev Krishna. It wasn't Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. Arjuna never, as far as I'm aware, Arjuna never visited Vrindavan. Arjuna was interacting with Vasudev Krishna in Mathura, in Hastinapur, maybe not Mathura, in Hastinapur and Dwarka. So the original form of Krishna, that's what the Bhagavatam is encouraging us in that passage. I know devotees, and I can name names, but it's not necessary, who have amazing, you know, special devotion for Lord Narsingadeva. Some of our ISKCON leaders have very special devotion for Lord Narsingadeva or Lord Ramachandra. And those devotees, it doesn't diminish their devotion, it enhances their devotion for Krishna. And I can share this, the experience of visiting and taking part in visiting places where Lord Ramachandra performed his pastimes. The net result was my appreciation for Krishna grew. It wasn't diminished. And others have described the same thing to me. Go ahead.
This is from Visalaksha Prabhu. This is a... from his son. This is a question from son. Okay. How did Lord Krishna initially come in the upper Goloka Vrindavan? This is from Visalaksha Prabhu's 6-year-old son, Krishna Chandra. So how did Lord Krishna initially come in upper Goloka Vrindavan?
He didn't come. He's eternally there. So there are some things that don't have a beginning. They're eternal. And just as Goloka is eternal, Krishna in Goloka is eternal. There's no beginning.
This is from Uttama Bhakta Prabhu. Generally speaking, should a devotee focus more on the heart than intelligence, while both are important?
Both are important.
Paramarupa Prabhu's question. Women are considered to be less intelligent, but in Bhagavad Gita 10:34, intelligence or medha is identified as a feminine quality.
That's correct.
How do we reconcile the two? I do have a few thoughts on this, but I want to hear from your divine guru.
Well, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on it also. There's the material form, and then there's the spiritual potency. And Vaishyas and Shudras, that's the material description, and women is also a material description of embodiment. And the capacity for intelligence, generally speaking, and there's certainly exceptions, generally speaking, is less developed. I mean, we find this in Queen Kunti. She understands all kinds of things. She's super intelligent because of her heart, this other question, the heart and intelligence. But she's speaking of herself as less intelligent and being in the women class. But the factor, the spiritual factor of intelligence is at one of Krishna's shaktis. So that's feminine. So men or brahmanas or sadhus or perfected, you know, paramahamsa Vaishnavas, they have shakti. And that shakti is a feminine feature. But, you know, the bodies may be male, but they have this capacity given to them by Krishna that accompanies them in their service. That's it. Anything else? Srila Prabhupada ki? Yeah.